Astraea.
Jade.
How are you doing this week?
Well, I've had better weeks, but I've had some pretty good highs this week, let me tell you.
Yeah, I guess I'm similar. We're here again at Ink Fox and Paper Tiger, and we're reading one of your favorites.
Yeah, a favorite of mine for many years, yeah.
And I had not heard of this one before, but I had heard of this creator. This is Brood Hollow by Chris Straub. Very long-standing success in the webcomic space. Mostly known for association with Penny Arcade, which is probably the most famous webcomic of all time, at least in the pre-Homestuck era.
And it's still around, so yes. Chris Straub has been working in webcomics 4 years. He started in about the same era with a webcomic called Checkerboard Nightmare, which was late enough that it is a parody of the idea of webcomics. It is a webcomic about the character of a webcomic wanting to get big in webcomics. Which eventually had a successor in a sci-fi comic called Starslip Crisis. And the reason I bring up these two comics are because Brood Hollow is unusual for us. This is a guy who has been refining his craft for years.
It is probably at a strange border of amateur and professional, and that he has done it professionally, but this is an amateur project on his side.
Yeah, and he's done a little bit of everything. Before Brood Hollow, he did a lot of what's called creepypasta writing. I think we're familiar with those little weird horror
stories. Most people are familiar with creepypasta by now.
Yes, specifically the Candle Cove one, which is about children sharing memories of a creepy children's show from the local television station, Local 58. During and after Brood Hollow, he made a YouTube video series called Local 58, where creepy apocalyptic stuff happens on VHS recordings of an old local television affiliate, and is often sort of considered the kickoff for the analog horror YouTube horror genre.
Yeah, and I actually had forgotten that I had seen those until they came up here. I didn't know who they were by, and it turns out it's Chris Straub. Because I did get big into analog horror games a couple of Halloweens ago and tried out a bunch. And it's interesting to see they do have a particular inception point. And there is a specific moment when they become trendy.
And he also was doing D&D podcasting at the inflection point of Dungeons & Dragons podcasting. He was actually doing it before Adventure Time? Yeah, he was doing it before Adventure Time because he got pulled in when Penny Arcade was doing that in the Dungeons & Dragons 4th edition era. He has been this guy in the background who has been one step ahead of absolutely everybody else in a bunch of different fields, a big innovator, and nobody's ever heard of this guy.
Well, I have heard of Chris Straub, actually. Yeah. It's just that I've heard of Chris Straub from back in the very early webcomic days. Back in the, as we mentioned, the bad webcomic wiki age. Chris Straub was always kind of a big name in webcomics to some degree.
But he never found much financial success.
No, it is very weird to know that this dude has been not just still around, but has always been on just ahead of the wavefront on pop culture, especially for internet pop culture. It's a funny, funny thing to think about.
Yeah, no, I've liked a lot of his work, and Brood Hollow is probably my favorite thing by him.
Yeah, I don't know if I've ever actually read a Chris Straub comic from beginning to end until now. I did, what's the black and white satire one he has? What's that called?
Chainsaw Suit. How could I forget Chainsaw Suit? His Gag a Day comic.
Yeah, some famous Chainsaw Suit comics went around a while ago, especially the one where all houses matter.
Yeah,
but no. Brood Hollow, though, what's the most accurate touch point for Brood Hollow? It began in 2012.
Yeah.
And it ended in, technically it ended in 2014, but there's one more page that exists in 2015. And then there's quite a lot of supplemental material. Yes, I hear the anticipation on your voice, Astraea. There is far more than just what we read here. But don't worry, I'll let you get to that. I'll let you play with your food. So here I am to dissect the main text. Brood Hollow is divided into two parts, at least the webcomic is. Book one and book two. It surrounds the exploits of, what is his full name?
Wadsworth Zane.
Wadsworth Quentin Zane?
Yeah, I think so. Well, that sounds right.
Who is a Depression-era encyclopedia salesman down on his luck, who gets a mysterious inheritance notice in the mail to move to the town of Brood Hollow and collect his inheritance from a distant, what is it, the second grand half uncle once removed, Virgil Zane. The art style is difficult to describe. I would say that it feels way more at home as the Sunday Funnies than it does as a horror comic, and I believe that's intentional.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
occasionally it does a style shift into like genuine classical 2010s style horror, and the contrast is part of the reason it's so creepy.
Yeah, it's it pulls this trick where all of the characters are very cutesy, they're very abstracted, they're very iconic in
they're very Charles Schulz peanuts.
Yeah. You know, they look distinctive, they look expressive, they're very well drawn, they're very simple. And the art style, while simple, also has this very grainy, gritty coloring style. Like background. Yeah,
there is a gentle, like, stained paper wash over almost every page.
Yeah. It's got this unique style to it. It is the trick, as you mentioned, that when it wants something to be horrific, all of a sudden it's a much more rendered style, a much more detailed style. The shading goes from this is kind of water stained to scratchy and scraggly and much blotchier. And one of my favorite features of how the comic works is it uses color emotionally, not representationally.
Most of the time it sits in this nice, like slightly desaturated, but still very rich color palette. Especially when Dr. Engstrom is around. Getting ahead of myself here. So in addition to Wadsworth, we have two other main leads. There's Dr. Klaus Engstrom, who is a period psychologist, and therefore most of what he has in mind about the human psyche is either intentionally silly or vastly out of date, because it's this comic is set in the 1920s, 1930s, interwar period, and it's when psychiatry is a fairly new science.
And they get away with a lot by just having him trying to invent his own kind of psychiatry.
He tries to invent his own lingo.
Yes, it's like, oh, that's an that's like an offensive, like a mental offensive reaction. You mean defensive?
In front of your anti-psyche.
Yes. And which lets him get away with a lot of stuff, so he can make psychobabbly things that don't have to be accurate to any actual psychobabble. And like Zane, he is a recent addition to Brood Hollow. He just moved there.
What's worth saying is, I guess the period term for him would be neurotic, but I believe obsessive compulsive is a better description of him today.
Yes.
He has a strange attitude in his head that if he does things in certain ways and follows certain patterns, as he calls them, then bad things will be prevented from happening. But if he fails, then trouble will come his way and fast. Which is his defining characteristic is his anxiety and his pseudo paranoia. Which, being a horror comic, how much of this is real? That's a big question that the story presents to us. And then our third protagonist is Iris, who is the local girl. Her father is the lawyer that Zane was supposed to contact to get his inheritance, but he's not in town. And Zane finds himself basically stranded in Brood Hollow with nothing to do until this mess can be resolved. And that is the central premise of book one. And it seems fairly straightforward, but strange things start piling on very, very fast.
Very fast. One feature of this particular horror universe that Straub does is there are layers and layers and layers of things going on at any given moment. At first it's just, oh, there's a ghost girl in the hotel. Who's known to the hotel keeper, who calls her a curious little thing and seems to be watching Zane through doors. Because part of the pattern is, if something is open, especially partially open, not all the way open and not all the way closed, things can leak in. Brood Hollow is a weird place in addition to the ghosts. It has lots of people who seem to be incredibly friendly, but also don't seem to notice any of the weird things. None of them think it's strange that there seems to be a new mysterious holiday celebrated nowhere else besides Brood Hollow almost every other day.
There are unusual local customs. They're incredibly friendly, but they have a lot of strange traditions that only go partially explained. They say that they've done these things because they always do these things, but there doesn't appear to be a particular history to any particular holiday, like the celebration where they welcome Wadsworth Zane with tuning forks and happy songs. Why they do the tuning forks is not explained, but the caveat is simply, it's tradition, we always do this. And very little detail actually gets addressed about what the historical cause for it was. Why does everybody say hello, hello, hello three times? Is that just custom? Where does that come from? They don't know, or they don't talk about it. Which is it?
And, you know, you might think, oh, this town has a horrible secret and they're all, like, actually out to get Zane. No, they're not. That's part of what's interesting about this comic is
one of the great twists is that there doesn't seem to be a conspiracy. Nobody else seems to have any better idea of what's going on.
Yes. There's weird stuff. This town has secrets, but none of the people there seem to understand the secrets. They don't perceive anything weird about this.
Yeah, they don't find it strange, which I think that's a very interesting layer of horror. I guess you could call this social horror. It reminds me very much of like J-horror or K-horror?
Yes.
In a weird way.
Oh my god.
Like, where like the frightening thing is directly in front of you, and you can see it, often in like broad daylight, but nothing is done about it, or you can't do anything about it, is the tension in J and K-horror. I can't help but wonder if Brood Hollow was deeply influenced by those things.
It wouldn't surprise me, because Chris Straub seems much more widely read than I'm used to comics writers from this era being.
Actually, the closest touch point I had for it was the game Pathologic.
Yeah,
where there's a distant town out in the country with strange customs and strange things are going on that are unexplained or unexplainable, and some things clearly stand out, but not as much as you'd think.
There's a secret society, but that secret society just plays cards and drinks and talks about business.
Yeah, even they don't have a lot of secrets. There's a second secret society that's just a ladies get together every day or every week, where they bring pies and do like community outreach stuff.
And ironically, they know more of the secrets.
Yeah, you might be prepared to think, oh, there's like a secret Stepford Wives thing going on. No, they're just sweet old ladies.
And yeah, so much of the comic is that tension between the handful of people who notice this, which is Zane Engstrom and Iris Bell Ullweather. And they notice all of these things. Like, Iris starts noticing them after she starts hanging out with Zane and Engstrom.
Yeah. And Engstrom notices them, but passes most of them off as, like, psychiatric delusions. Zane's own anxiety is getting to him.
Very Dana Scully of him. That was just, you know, gas.
Things start coming to a head, like properly to a head, when at the welcoming ceremony with the aforementioned tuning forks, giant bats attack.
Yes.
The town is overrun with them. Wadsworth starts running from them. Friends that he made earlier, the Bottlefly Boys, come to his rescue. A bunch of three muscled toughs with funny X eyes who are not brothers, but just look very similar.
And are just good dudes that everybody likes.
Yeah, they're just good dudes. They rescue him in what is basically the comic's first action sequence. He even sees a ghost in an alleyway, goes back to his hotel, and by the time he wakes up in the morning, no one seems to have cared. The newspaper reports that it was just a flock of normal bats. No one seems to have noticed or cared that like actual monsters attacked the town last night. Does anybody even remember? Or are they disguising
what happened? Or did he hallucinate it?
Yeah. Raising questions in an audience's head, that's what a plot is. And things start to go off the rails from there. Every time you think you have something stable, like some stable grasp of the comic's reality, things get a little weirder and a little worse. And that pattern just sort of continues until the end of the comic.
Like, exactly. What thing is dangerous? What thing is just creepy? What parts of the pattern he ascribes are real? Just keeps getting deeper and deeper and deeper in as it goes.
Yeah, this constant uncertainty of, like, what is misinformation? What is disinformation? what's a red herring and what's actually useful. It's not clear what the cause of any of this is for the longest time. Eventually, and spoilers, if you plan to read Boot Hollow, we recommend it. But spoilers from this point out. Eventually, it is discovered by Zane and Iris and Angstrom that the town suffers from collective and periodic amnesia fits. Iris has forgotten that her father is not coming home from business. He died months ago.
At first Zane starts asking about her father, after a bit he stops asking about when her father's going to come back, which is a thing this comic really likes to do, and it's leaking through everything, this imprecision of memory.
I found that an extremely chilling thing in this comic, is that the characters who you really want to succeed keep floundering and having to relearn things, relearn new horrors over and over again. It felt sort of like a very good chapter of JoJo, if I could imagine which chapter of JoJo would be. I'm mostly thinking of the bit in part 6 that's like a pastiche of the movie Memento.
Yeah, I can see that.
I don't know, the tone of this comic is extremely weird, but I like it.
It's very conscientious of what it's doing, in that it is trying to put you off kilter both by having, this is a joke, this is a pretty webcomic-y joke, this is a punchline from a joke setup. But whether the punchline is going to be a joke or a scare is very hard to predict.
Oh, there's also this fun little accessorial side story of Kadav, the skeleton newspaper comic. He's presented as like an in-universe like newspaper comic with like the registered U.S. Patent Office stamp at the corner and everything. And his little side strips come in really hokey 3-panel joke form in black and white.
And yeah, and these I believe were partially used as filler so he could work ahead on the main comic.
Kadav really, he sticks out as like, this feels like some other character from some other comic that I haven't read. He sticks out like a sore thumb until he starts actually somehow participating in the proper Brood Hollow story. Just because he can, I guess. It's not really clear if he's like meant to be fiction and hallucinatory or if he's actually a real person.
But he does tend to appear in dream sequences. Although what the distinction between waking and dream sequences as the comic goes on become very blurred.
That's kind of a defining trait of Calvin and Hobbes' art style, is that the fantasies look more real and better rendered than the scratchy newspaper comic style that the rest of the story is in.
Yeah, and in this comic, I think it's trying to do that the thing where it has, oh, we have these very iconic characters, so they're very empathetic, that you can very much just like, oh, here's, you know, a little guy. And then stuff gets more deeply rendered to remove you from what you're seeing.
There's an especially good touch that I like where on one of the splash pages featuring a newspaper front cover, you can see that the date stamp at the very top of the paper has Brood Hollow, West Virginia, Wednesday, November 13th, 1930. And then someone has typed 2, 3, and 4 in the same place. Is that a misprint or does someone actually not know? Baffling. Brilliant little touch there. Blink and you'll miss it. I love it. And then book 2 continues in much the same way. The season changes to wintertime, and the characters have to rediscover that they are forgetting over and over again. And then the conceit of book 2 is that there is a murderer on the loose somewhere in town and no one really knows who it is. Wadsworth thinks it might be him because he can no longer trust his own memory.
And one of the Bottlefly boys does.
The one who never had any speaking lines.
And one of the things too that impresses me is that I cared, and it expresses that because the other two guys care so much.
Yeah.
We see the emotional reaction of the other two Bottlefly boys to all of this.
Yeah, like one of them starts drinking really bad and the other one decides to try and help him like as much as he can. And Wadsworth Zane's memories and his memories get worse and his dreams get more intense. Until a particularly grisly one in 2014 where he dreams about holes forming in people's bodies and eventually in his own body. And there's this genuinely chilling panel where like his body folds in on itself. It's like, ugh. Gabe just gave me the shivers.
Because the sort of horror motif in one is everything gets brown and red, and there's creepy, scraggly things that are pierced with bright blue, like bright blue eyes and bright blue ghosts. And this one, horror is, the imagery is holes, and instead of getting darker and more scraggly, everything and more saturated and more dark, everything becomes, because it's winter, everything becomes more faded, and
yeah, everything gets lost in a white field.
Yeah, and everything is indistinct, not because it's too much detail, it's obscured because you can't make anything out. Everything's a little too clear. Everything's not clear enough, I mean. And the holes, yeah, the holes just keep popping up. It's creepy.
It's very creepy.
Really creepy.
Yeah, probably my favorite page in the whole comic was the one from May 14th of 2014, when Wadsworth has discovered that he has a second journal that he's been writing most of the same things
in.
Oh,
God.
And he didn't realize it. And he drags it to Dr. Angstrom's house, and he says, "Troubling, but easily disproven. I take notes of all our sessions, my boy. Recommend Dream Journal. Find common threads. Go back a month, Doc. What do your notes say then? Z having nightmares. Recommend Dream Diary. Look for common threads. Mein Gott." I'm sorry. I hear Dr. Ankrum's voice in fucking Chris McCulloch's Dr. Killinger voice.
You should. I think that's very accurate to it.
Or as a Sasha 9 from Psychonauts.
Oh, yeah.
Poncho Vail Rasputin.
And what was actually great about this is I had read this when it was coming out originally, and I had forgotten the twist with the second Troop Journal, so I was like, oh my god, I forgot the journal!
I mostly like that page because that's really the inflection point, that in the very next one, where Dr. Angstrom admits that, like, no, his scientific approach does not mean that he is immune to the town's amnesia and starting to get more supernatural, taking bigger leaps of faith. It's what I thought for a long time that the setup for this was going to be Angstrom tries to approach this logically, and Wadsworth tries to at first, because he also considers himself a man of the 20th century. But as time goes on, I thought, oh, well, Wadsworth's anxiety is going to build and build and build until he starts to get more desperate and take stranger measures, and Dr. Angstrom's not going to go along with that. And that there would be a disagreement between the two of them. But no, Dr. Angstrom, having been presented with scientific proof that his own perspective is flawed and compromised, goes right into Wadsworth's plan. He agrees.
I like how much this is like kind of a bridge, because this is, you know, this is from about 2011, 2012, and is very emblematic of kind of media of this period, where instead of having characters who have, where the cast has like a lot of really sardonic, you know, dislike of each other, the characters are defined more by how they come together.
Have you seen Stranger Things?
I saw some of the first season, but I'm one of the few people who hasn't.
If you've seen, at least that's what I'm going to talk about here, is that this also is similar to the first season of Stranger Things, where the setting and setup are very similar to like classic horror movies of the 80s and 90s. But the key difference in Stranger Things that sets it apart from the media that inspired it is that people just do sensible and logical things, like come together and agree on things, and like don't start needless bickering between each other for the sake of a plot, or don't do the stupid thing and go into the basement. Part of the appeal of early Stranger Things was that they acted like real people in a horror setting. They didn't act like horror characters in a horror setting, and didn't get lost in the tropes of their own genre, which is one thing that just made it more relatable. It made it more fun to watch. It's like, oh, these people are behaving more or less how I would in this situation.
And one thing I like about how Brood Hollow twists that is they have to come together to do the irrational things, because irrational things are the only way to approach it, because as they find out, if you're scared, you remember.
Memory works if you're terrified, but if you get comfortable and complacent, then you start to forget. Which I feel like that must be the tonal core of the story. There's a thesis there, but I couldn't tell you what it is in a single neat sentence.
It's, I think a lot of it, from what I remember about the early discussions, which I wish I could find now, thanks Twitter for being you now, was that a lot of this is based on Straub's own anxieties, right?
Yeah.
So a lot of it is kind of wrestling with being anxious, But also how I think in some ways anxiety can protect you, but it also hurts you.
Yeah, but there's also like the quintessential like George Sonoyama quote of those who fail history are doomed to repeat it.
Yeah.
I think in Brudhalo's case, it's like history will smother those who fail to remember it.
It feels different than other like creepy small town horror stories. And as a huge Twin Peaks fan, I'm a big fan of these. And as somebody who grew up in a creepy small town with lots of mysteries I'm never going to solve, it's hard to grapple with what the comic is saying in there because it's hard to grapple with everything in the comic on purpose.
There's the comic where Iris learns that the old ladies club actually does know quite a lot about the amnesia just because they've been living with it for so long. And they cope with it by remembering for each other. It's easier to remember things that happened to another person than things that happened to you for reasons unclear. Iris has the actual confrontational questions like, if you know all this, why would you stay in this town? And the response is, well, there are devils everywhere. This is the one that I know. Which that stuck with me a little longer than I thought it would.
Sometimes people would cope with stuff rather than, you know, what else is out there. And it seems like there's more out there. Maybe there's some truth to it.
Yeah. That's something that sticks with me here in 2024, having watched people just sort of get used to the apocalypse. People just sort of shrugging their shoulders and going back to work in the middle of a pandemic.
Or even when I go to the grocery store out here, they now have cops who check every receipt, and I just feel like I'm going in. I feel like I'm going insane. Like, why are people
like I'm taking crazy pills?
Yeah, it's like, why is everyone so calm about and literally armed man? Like, if there's one thing about America I thought I knew, it's that nobody likes that. Like, that
except
kind of...
Except that they're just fine with it when it affects people that they don't care about.
The cops can't profile people anymore. So in order to make it not suspicious when they profile people, they just inspect everyone.
It's weird to get sentimentalities like this in a comic from 2014. When people were, for lack of a better word, less woke.
Straub was well on his way from moving past earlier internet edgelord phases into... and he was never as edgelordy as a lot of his contemporaries, but yeah. There's a good-naturedness that permeates the comic, which also makes the horror more intense.
All of our main characters are fairly empathetic and fairly sweethearted, which makes the times when they need to get rough all the more heartbreaking. So, like, they could have not done this. There was a world that didn't make them do this, but that was the world where they forgot and let injustices and troubles keep hitting them. And then we get to the final page of book two, which is at the bottom of an impossible pond, wearing a diving suit, Wadsworth discovers an ancient tablet full of arcane chthonic symbols and a sigil that looks an awful lot like the skull and shovels sigil that he's been seeing throughout the story and around the town. A lot of cairns with blood and strange scrawling writings, and most importantly, the actual physical ghost of Kadav, the comic book character, telling him shh and crying tears of blood. That's the end of book two, and that's all you'll see apart from like a small side thing for the menu from Cubby's dining car. That's the extent of Brudhalo on the internet.
Well, that's currently on the Brudhalo website.
Yes, you have done a bit more digging.
But that is the end of the comic as it officially stands right now.
Yeah, and I do want to say, I want to point out one thing about the Cubby's dining car menu. Hot cocoa, iced cocoa, and room temperature cocoa.
Although, as it says earlier in the comic, you know, that coffee's filled with acid. Don't worry, all the food at Cubby's is pure alkaline.
Does the only thing that really bothered me about Brudhalo is that it's set in West Virginia, so shouldn't it be Brudhaller? So, Australia, please enlighten us as to the remainder of what happens in Brudhalo. Or at least the media around it.
Brudhalo seemingly became a bit of a struggle for Straub.
Really? Yeah. Never got that impression.
He said at the end that he couldn't figure out how to do book three, and book three was always intended to be the end. Unusually for a comic, he decided he was going to do three books that were 130 pages each over the course of, you know, 5-6 years, which is a shockingly realistic, like, objective.
Yeah, it's an that's an unusually realistic objective for a webcomic artist to have, as a set beginning, middle, and end. A defined endpoint. I can't think of many comics that start with a defined endpoint in mind, or at least a solid page count.
It was kind of a struggle to get there. This isn't speculation. He's said that in a couple places over the years. He's not that mysterious of a creator. He's much more open than a lot of other people. He's mysterious about some of his lore and his future plot twists, but he's had a lot of struggles that he's wanted to be private about, but he's been struggling. And one of the big things about this is Brood Hollow has had three attempts at book three. The first two attempts were focused on the women's society and Iris being ascended to essentially the leader of it. The third of which was the only one I was originally aware of, and is the one you can find on the Brood Hollow Patreon for free, which was the best of them by far, even though it had less pages than the other two, opens with a dream sequence instead of introducing that whole subplot, and where instead Brood Hollow is on fire in this apocalyptic moment.
Oh.
Yes. And Zane being told it isn't a dream, and then cutting to the opening that the both books have had of here's normalcy, except this time it says before. It's the first time we've had a flashback. And it also sets up that Zane, and this is a theme of all of the things, which is that Zane is getting more and more and more lost in the pattern, and less and less and less about investigating the weird stuff in town.
His connection to reality steadily frays.
Yes, he is obsessed about the pattern and understanding it, but it, as a coping mechanism for not dealing with the eldritch horror that defies all reality or anything, except mysteriously does have a lot of symbols that look like his designs for the pattern in his dream and in his journal.
But none of these attempts got very far, you say?
Yeah. One got to 22 pages, I think one got to about 16, 17 pages, and one got 8 pages.
So, and this is something that if you're out there and you're listening and you're not a creative type, this happens to everybody, and it happens at varying intensities, but pretty much every artist or creator will find this problem eventually. In the old days, it was called writer's block, but burnout is probably the more accurate term for it. It's just that you try your hardest, you think as much as you can, you plan things out, and it just doesn't click. And you can tell that it's not clicking as you make it, and it stops. Like, the energy that would come out of your drawing arm is just gone. You have no motivation to work on something that you're not passionate about. And if you've never worked in a creative field, you may not understand that. You may be like, oh, well, why not just turn out the product? It's what you always do. But it's not that simple. The product itself will suffer if you're not interested in it. And because the product is suffering, you'll become less interested in it. And it's a miserable spiral downward in quality that you can feel as you do it, and you feel ashamed as you do it. It hurts. I've been in that cycle quite a lot of times. Arguably, I'm in it right now. It's miserable. I hate that creators have to go through it so much, but it's just sort of a natural part of the writing process, is that eventually you'll hit a trench. And you won't be able to get out of the trench. And you may decide that it wasn't worth building that bridge in the first place. It's possible.
What I will say about Brood Hollow is he's had a couple projects that he either declared finished or abandoned and has said as much. But he says on his website that he updated well after the last update to Brood Hollow at all. He still says it's hiatus. And whenever he's asked about it, he says he's thinking about it, and he hasn't been able to return to it creatively, but he's thinking about it.
I understand what it means to think about it. I have projects that I haven't touched in years that I still think about. But that's all right. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with stopping or putting it on hold forever. It's okay. It's just a story.
He hasn't stopped working, though, on things. And not this universe, either. This didn't really start with Brood Hollow. It started with his writing for a website called Iker Falls. I think it's pronounced Iker. Iker? Blood of the Gods.
I don't ever actually know.
Yeah, I'm going to say Iker.
The Dark Fluid.
Yeah, Iker Falls. The Blood of the Gods is what Iker means. And a lot of parts of Brood Hollow are just had a draft in there. Like, the first story arc was from a creepy idea from that book. It was on a website. There's a lot of world building that was a first draft for Brood Hollow in that. And some of it is just, this was redone. Some of that is apparently still, air quotes, canon, whatever that means. And he also did the analog horror footage, as I mentioned before, Local 58. And Local 58, which has had a couple hiatuses of its own, but he's actually shown us, but he's working on that, and we know that because he's shown a screenshot of what's probably the next episode he's working on. And the thing about that is Local 58 is a local station for the same area that Brood Hollow's in, rural West Virginia. It's got an episode called Children's Cartoon, which is a Kadavra cartoon. And the Kadavra cartoon seemingly is from an old, old, old broadcast and mentions Brood Hollow as one of the names of the towns in the area. Which is not in any of the later broadcasts, and this is Chris Straub, that means something. There's a little nod to Brood Hollow there. And also it probably doesn't exist anymore for some reason. He's still doodling, and he still does doodles of the Brood Hollow characters. So whether or not
the weird over-the-top French skeleton mime
is too good a character.
He's just too good a character. He's a great needed bit of levity in some of the darker moments.
Yeah. And Straub's work is still good, and I'm excited to see what he does in the future, regardless of what it is.
Yeah, here we go. Would you like me to hit you with the big question?
Go for it.
Astraea, if this comic continues, where do you expect it to go?
The real coin flip is, does it end with all of them losing everything, or does it end with them having some kind of victory? I suspect that the rituals are part of the bigger pattern. Like, all of the holidays are part of the bigger pattern. I think that's fairly obvious an implication. Since Zane's family is old in the area.
Mm-hmm. Although he didn't even know this town existed. His family was completely separate from it. Here, would you like me to entertain you with my theory?
Go for it.
You mentioned that, like, having heard what you just described of Local 58, that the Brood Hollow was only mentioned in the one episode and doesn't seem to be canon in any of the others. The idea, I would think, is that the fire you mentioned is that the town burns down at some point in history and is either never rebuilt or itself forgotten about because the key tenet of Brood Hollow is forgetting things. Is it possible that Virgil Zane didn't actually exist, or that his name wasn't Virgil Zane, and everybody in town is simply forgotten, and this letter got sent out through some conceit of the pattern reaching out to get a new victim and self-perpetuate to try and draw in new members and keep the town alive and subservient to whatever dark power keeps it operating?
I think it's less subservient and more that, like the pattern, it's trying to stabilize things so stuff doesn't leak through. And it mentions a couple times that people aren't observing rituals as well as they used to.
If, like, for an ending, if you want to go in, like, the classic Lovecraft route, Lovecraft stories usually either end in mass tragedy and death, or in the rare case that they end with quote-unquote victory for the human side, it's Pyrrhic, and it didn't set like the efforts of the deep ones back more than a few minutes.
Well, if Brood Hollow and Local 58 are canon, well, Local 58 sure seems to imply that the world is going to fucking end.
But when is it not?
But when isn't it? Yeah.
This it's weird. This comic only has like three villains. The Taylor ghost from the first chapter. There's the there's the predator bug in the second chapter, and then there's the implicit third existence somewhere out there that's causing it all to start perpetuating the whole mystery that we never see.
Which might just be the town itself. It just left me wonder asking all the questions over again. And there is one more thing I know from Straub. I saw an interview with him at one point, which I could not find, again, where he was talking about one thing, a mistake that he thinks a lot of analog horror makes, is not leaving enough blank spaces. Horror is scary when you don't know everything. Horror is scary when you don't have all of the answers. And one of the things about Broodhollow is, I think a lot of these questions weren't gonna have answers. In a weird way, retroactively, it ending at book two and having three different attempts at an ending, accidentally feels like a really good thematic ending to it.
Yeah, in a strange way.
It's a faded thing that's lost to the internet that you need to dig into Discord servers and Reddit threads to find any trace of anymore. Kind of fading away into a thing I remembered.
Yeah. Vis-a-vis the horror being at its best when there are fewer answers, one of my favorite games is a game called Inscription, which I love to death, but it's a horror card game that's easily at its highest point in its early chapters when you know the least about the game, you know the least about the lore and the setting that you're in. And as you play and it goes on and advances into later acts, its tone falls flat on its fucking face. And like, Inscription is really good in the early moments and just falls apart by the end because it has to explain the setting to you. It has to explain the characters and their origins and their backstory. And eventually in the endless mode, you even unlock like horror log diary entries. And like, it's just, it all just comes apart when it tries to explain itself to you. It doesn't feel scary. It feels clownish. I think that's probably exactly what Straub is talking about there. It's that I would hate Broodhollow if it had a lore wiki.
Yeah, like, people have tried to do it, but you can't. Like, there's always more questions, and the more you dig, the more questions there are, which is perfect.
But Scott Benson, the creator, one of the creators of Night in the Woods, had a fairly funny Twitter exchange with someone once where they asked him if one of the characters in the side story, Longest Night, was related to one of the characters from their main game, Night in the Woods. And the answer was no. And the person asks, well, why not? Why isn't your story a perfectly solvable puzzle box? And it's like, that's not how good horror is written.
Yeah, it's just like, hey, yeah, here's this. And, you know, even here, it's like, hey, there's this connection between these two things with Kadavra, but that doesn't mean anything, I don't think.
Where is Kadavra a real person? Is he a cartoon character who just happens to have a ghost? Who cares?
Yeah.
Why would answering that question help the story?
It's supposed to be disquieting and leave you with questions.
And in that sense, Never Finishing is a success in its own way.
Of all the unfinished webcomics I've read over the years, the lack of finishing Broodhollow, at least in a weird way, feels like a better, like an ending in a way that they usually don't.
It does at least fit the tone. I will say I really enjoyed reading this one. It's one of those things where sadly I don't really have a lot that I disliked about it.
Yeah.
I will say that the simplified comic art style, like, it just, especially in moments where they try to be more severe, it's a bit of a drag on like trying to be more melodramatic and serious when they just look like Kirby. They look like characters from Kirby.
I get you. I get where you're coming from with that.
I couldn't help but wonder if like maybe a touch more detail in the normal scenes would have made it work better, but then it would have also been that much more complicated to draw. I don't know.
I think part, and this came out at a very steady pace when it came out originally.
Yes. Part of the reason it's kept so simple is that it can be made more easily. Yeah. Is there a big complaint that you have about Broodhollow Australia apart from the fact that it doesn't finish?
Honestly, no.
No?
Believe it or not, I didn't have, like, I think if anything, I agree with you about your complaint, but like, yeah, I was pretty satisfied with it the whole way through.
It's only 300 pages in a webcomic? What are you insane? Everybody knows you don't get to be a big name until you hit at least 600.
We're not even supposed to know the cast until, like, you know, the second year.
But I've been guilty of that. Fuck, have I been guilty of that?
I liked having a short read that was also a good one.
What to do on our list for next time, though?
Let's see. We've sort of been unofficially alternating back and forth between picks, so let's keep going with that.
Would you like me to pick one, then?
Well, you said you had one in mind.
Have you ever read Hitmen for Destiny?
No, I have not, but I did read another comic by that author.
Yeah, it was one of the first things I pointed you to when we were discussing starting this podcast, is Ivan Thursby. Hitmen for Destiny is one of my favorite comics of all time. since you got to show me one of yours, I'll show you one of mine. Where can people find you, Astraea?
Automatic Tiger everywhere. Co-host, Twitter, Blue Sky. That's kind of the internet now.
Yeah, and I'm Cups of Jade on all those same places. You can find me at Cups of Jade on co-host chiefly, but also everywhere else. You know, the good websites for the cool kids. And I believe that'll wrap us for today. Thank you for talking with me, Astraea. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, thank you for talking with me, Jade. I really enjoyed it, too.
See you next time, folks.
See you next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye.